The end of Ukraine's conflict depends exclusively on Zelensky's acceptance of Moscow's demands. Without it, Russian special military operation will continue. And of course, the more Zelensky receives weapons from the West, the more he will continue to try to push the conflict forward, leading to the suffering of millions of Ukrainian citizens who took forward to peace. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy Joseph Borrell traveled to Ukraine on April 8 to meet with President Volodymyr Zelensky and other Ukrainian authorities. Some important topics related to the conflict were raised during the conversations, such as the issue of fifth package of sanctions against Russia prepared by the European bloc, which, according to the European Commission's proposal, includes an embargo on Russian coal in addition to possible Ukrainian accession to the EU. During an interview, von der Leyen stated, Russia will descend into economic, financial, and technological decay, while Ukraine is marching towards the European future. This is what I see. Also, specifically about Ukrainian possible EU's membership, she said, it will not, as usual, be a matter of years, but I think a matter of weeks. On this trip, both von der Leyen and Borrell greatly praised the military aspect of the search for resolution of the conflict, asserting on several occasions that Ukraine must defeat Russia. Apparently, Europeans are abdicating any diplomatic or pro-peace stance and adopting a stance that is absolutely in favor of victory by arms, which, according to most experts, is virtually impossible for Ukraine. Borrell, in this meeting, promised that he would immediately send an additional aid of 500 million euros for Kiev to buy weapons. Previously, the EU had already sent another 1 billion euros. The diplomat also made statements implying that he considers the current European support budget for Ukraine to be low, comparing it with EU spending on imports from Russia. On another occasion, Borrell made clear his anti-Russian radicalism and his pro-war stance, stating categorically that this war must be won on the battlefield. Considering Borrell's high position in the EU and his direct influence on the conflict, the statement sounds really dangerous, as Europe appears willing to finance a major escalation of the conflict. The main problem, however, is that the EU is not the only side interested in financing such as escalation. The UK has shown several times that it aims to take the conflict forward until an eventual Ukrainian victory happens. Recently, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson also visited Kiev and met with Zelensky and other Ukrainian authorities. The stance of the British leader was very similar to that of the Europeans, with Johnson also committing to send packages of military aid to Kiev. Before traveling to Ukraine, the Prime Minister had already announced that he would send aid worth $130 million in weapons to Kiev. Among the weapons in the package will be anti-aircraft and anti-tank missiles, precision ammunition, night vision equipment. On Saturday, April 10th, however, already in Ukraine, Johnson pledged another $500 million in aid, which shows that he is really increasing his support for Zelensky's war plans. It is also important to remember that before the first round of negotiations between the Russian and Ukrainian diplomatic delegations in Ankara, Johnson had called Zelensky and instructed the Ukrainian president not to admit that his diplomats gave too much during the talks. Johnson seems very determined to assert that the victory can only come through arms, instructing the Ukrainian authorities to avoid effective diplomatic dialogue. It is curious to see how Westerners want to carry this conflict forward, with the troops not being directly involved in the fighting. The position of European and British leaders is very comfortable, sending money and weapons to Ukrainians to fight a war they cannot win, only to continue destabilizing the Russian strategic environment and delaying the inevitable victory of the Moscow's special operation. For the West, Ukraine is a hopeless case, and the longer the conflict lasts, the better. This is a way to gain time in the face of a deferred defeat scenario. Ukrainians are just serving as instruments in a game that is already not theirs. Also, it should be mentioned that if Kyiv continues to receive heavy weapons and launch increasingly aggressive offensives, the Kremlin will be compelled to change its strategy, possibly using more of its military capacity, whose potential has been very controlled during the operation, in order to avoid larger-scale damage to the Ukrainian people. In this sense, Western military and financial aid directly threatens the peace of the entire world, which is suffering the consequences of the conflict. The longer Zelensky resists, the more sufferings the Ukrainian people will have to endure to carry on a conflict where Kyiv has already been partially defeated.
Start. Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. How are you? I hope wherever you are, you're fine and you're doing well. In case you're not doing well in this holy land, we pray for your well-being, inshallah. You are listening to the IRIB English Radio. This is the Youth Station. I am your host, Zainab Askari, and I have with me today a very special guest. She's also Zainab, so we have two Zainabs here.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm Zainab Musavi, and today I have the privilege of participating in this beautiful and nice discussion.
Yeah, Zainab, how are you?
Thank you. I'm well, and I'm so energetic for having this discussion with you, dear Zainab.
Same here. So since you're Zainab, it gives me more energy. Like, we are two Zainabs today.
Let's see what you're going to teach today. Yes. That's quite interesting for me, too.
Yeah. So what do you think? What are we going to discuss today? Shall we discuss religion?
Sure, definitely. Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. Why do people need religion?
Well, I think this kind of question has got lots of answers. And in order to provide an appropriate answer for this question, you must render lots of answers which are highly connected to one another.
True.
However, after thinking about such an issue, I can reach two types of answers which can be somehow used as a justification for those people who do not believe in any religion or God.
All right.
Considering myself talking to an atheist person, I would raise these two justifications. In the question, when I'm asked why I use a religion and why am I considered as a religious person,
true,
I would definitely say that I personally prefer to be religious and use and select a religion for myself to be somehow controlled by that religion. You know, when talking about a religion, I'm not going to talk about Islam.
You're talking about religion in general.
Yes, all religion right. In general. When saying that, you know, religion is something that sets ethical framework for your life.
True.
We have several concepts in our lives, such as love, such as respect, such as marriage, lots of things.
True.
And religion is the thing that gives value to these concepts. For example, it shows us what is good and what is bad. Mm-hmm. And that could be considered as a great help for me as a person who does not know. Of course, I can refer to my insects, but when talking about religion and when talking about several concepts, definitely religion can come and help me doing the right thing I want to do. For example, as I said, respect, love, marriage, these are the things that our that religion, in fact, respects and gives them value. And on the other hand, there are several things like backbiting, like lying, like, for example, murder, that are debunked by the religion.
Okay.
And I am told that I must not, for example, break somebody's heart. Mm. So I might just joke and just talk to you, and through joking, even not intentionally, I might say something that you don't like and I might break your heart. But when I have a religion and when I believe in God, here
you have
I want
this
to set
Islam. Of rules that tell you, like, to take care of others'
yes,
heart.
Definitely. About Islam, when I know that God has told me not to break other people's hearts,
okay,
what we call as haqqun nas.
All right. What is haqqun nas?
Haqqun nas, it's really about respecting other people. When you do something that might affect other people,
okay,
in a bad way, that could be a responsibility for you.
Yeah.
Not to hurt anybody in any way. And in case you do such a thing, you would be responsible in front of the person.
We'll be talking about that. Here, we need to take a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned to IRIB English Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to the IRIB English Radio. This is the Youth Station, and here are two Zainabs discussing about the need of religion. So Zainab, you were talking about the need of religion. You said your own perspective.
Yes, and I want you to say your own opinion as well.
All right. Religion is a set of rules that you follow throughout your life, and I think not only Islam, every religion has got a set of rules. And it's not the people today, like, you know, who are following religion. People have been following set of rules, basically, from the very beginning. They are following now and they will be following in the future as well.
Definitely.
Because a set of rule tells you the way of life. And now, depending on which way of life you want to go through, then you select a perfect religion for yourself, which gives you a set of rules. And now the question why there is need of it. I think a human being materialistically has not developed yet. You know,
yes.
Like in terms of materialism, we are day by day, we have not known our body yet completely. For example, there are certain cancers that are untreated. There are certain diseases that are not being treated yet. That means we don't know our body yet.
Yes.
Who knows it? Who
the
knows
the person who has created it?
The creator, exactly.
Yes, the creator,
so, yeah.
Yes.
I think even if materialistically we are seeing, we don't know ourselves better.
Yeah.
So the more with the passage of time, we get to know about ourselves, we get to know about our surroundings, we get to know how to live a better life. Like, for example, the tech, we did not have this tech 10 years back, what we have today. 10 years back, people suffered a little, and now 10 years after, they are in a little relaxed mood. Mm-hmm. But with the passage of time, this materialistic things gets covered up about the human body himself, like to let him grow physically. And a human being has two kinds of growth. It's not just physical growth, it's a spiritual growth as well. So for physical growth as well, I think it's dependent on religion. And
yes, definitely.
Because the creator knows about him, what he created.
Yes, definitely. And, yes, you're right.
And about spiritual growth as well, to go towards perfection.
Yes.
The main goal is to reach the perfection. I think there's a need of these set of rules as called as religion. You see, like people just take an example of traffic. Those who do not follow the rules, they face an accident, they face fines, and so on and so forth. So faith, in the same way, I think if we do not follow a set of rules in our lives, we are going to face the same things.
The same difficulties.
Yeah.
Yes, you're
so
right.
It's very necessary to follow a set of rules. And now it depends which kind of set of rules you want to select. And for me, Islam is the best one, so I have chosen Islam as a set of rules to follow a better life.
Yes, and what I like about Islam is that it's about its focus on spirituality.
True.
You know, those people who do not follow any religion, they do not have spiritual connection with anybody, with creator.
True.
But especially we as Muslims, we have our spiritual connection with God, and we have the belief that God is superior to everything.
True.
And definitely such a point of view would influence our life for better. And we would just have lots of things done in a better way than those who do not believe in God or those who are atheists.
Uh-huh. You know, Zainab, we have a lot of shrines over here since we are living in Qom, and we go to Mashhad as well. We have a shrine over there. And you recently came from Karbala.
Yes.
And like you said rightly, that we need sometimes the people who do not believe in religions suffer more from depression, distress,
definitely,
and a lot
yes,
of things.
That's the point. Yes,
but
you're right.
How much did you get relieved since you came from a shrine recently?
Definitely. Yes, about the youth in Karbala and Najaf. You're quite right, and you're just saying the exact point. You know, when we were in Karbala or in any other holy shrine, those people who are religious and attend to such places, you know, you can feel their positive energy there. They're so enthusiastic about going to the shrine. When you stand for just a few minutes and see people coming and talking to the holy shrine, that gives you lots of energy. And that's quite interesting for me, at least, because they go and talk to the shrine in a way that they're talking to their friends. And even those people who are illegible, and those people who cannot speak just formally and correctly, even those people, they speak in their own language with the shrine. And you just feel the positive energy, and you just feel the
hope,
happiness.
The hope they have.
Yes, yes. And yes, and their hope is not compatible to other people.
I mean, I have
other
seen
people
who do not know how to talk. Youth is, you know, mostly stressed. And at that age, you're not able to discuss very a lot of things with your family.
It's difficult to talk
a lot of things with your friends.
Yes.
Here definitely. You need someone to talk your heart to.
Yes, yes, that's quite right. And the youth people, when they come, as I said, they're just laughing. They have so high spirituality and they talk to their holy shrine. They say their prayers. They, you know, even in cases when they have difficulties in their own lives, they ask their help. Mm-hmm. And I think that has influence on their lives. The young Muslims' life quite different from those who are atheists. There is a world of difference between the spirituality of a young Muslim person and an atheist one.
I have especially seen the smiling faces coming out.
Yes.
Like if a depressed face is going in and a smiling face is coming out with this hope that... he has talked his heart to someone when he believes in a religion, when he believes in God, and when he believes in spirituality.
Yes, and they regard going to their holy shrines, they regard it as a recess and as a remedy.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Imagine a Muslim youth who has faced a difficulty in his or her life. And on the other hand, an atheist who again faced difficulties in his or her life. The atheist person might go to his or her friend, talk to them, or just listen to music. I don't know. Go and...
do different things. He may not come to shrine or something like that.
And he might escape his life. Consider doing this as a remedy for him or herself. But a Muslim person, what would he do? As soon as a young Muslim person meets a problem or a difficulty, he goes to the holy shrine and talks to his or her holy imam as a grave source of energy, not just energy, as a person who we know that the holy person listens to us and he prays for us.
And as a connection between you and God, actually.
Yes, definitely. As I said, the spiritual connection. For example, my difficulties might be things that nobody knows about them. My concerns might be so personal that I cannot share them with anybody else. But with my holy imam, I don't have such things. And I feel so comfortable with him or her. I will share my thoughts and my difficulties. I would say prayers there. I would even cry. And I personally believe that sharing my thoughts and my difficulties with this holy person would make the situation better. And they will definitely say prayers for me and wish me luck and ask God to help me.
All right. So I think, and apart from all these talking your heart to taking out your depression and all, religion helps you in much, 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 many more things. Like in youth, especially, you are invited to so many sins through so many sources.
Yeah.
And if you have a religion and if you hold it very firm and strong, Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, says that a youth who avoids sins because of God is so much close to Allah. Because it's in youth age that you get invited to different sins through different ways that you cannot even, you know, tell to people, you cannot discuss with people. And here, religion is the best way of life that guides you what to do, when to do. It's the best counselor, basically.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Zainab Sadat, for being with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, dear listeners. You were listening to the Youth Station. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
What you heard was an IRIB English Radio program. please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The ongoing attempts to take over Muslim holy places, whether in Al-Quds, Al-Khalil or in Nablus, continue apace, as does valiant Palestinian resistance to them, says Joseph Massad, journalist, in an article published under the heading, How Zionism is Fueling a Religious War Over Al-Aqsa Mosque. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The Zionist Jewish colonial fundamentalist group, the Returning to the Mount, which advocates the construction of a third Jewish temple in Haram al-Sharif, the third holiest place in Islam, and is associated with the racist Catch group, announced recently that it plans to sacrifice animals as part of the Jewish Passover rituals on Friday, April 15th in Haram al-Sharif. In response, Hamas declared that it will not allow such rituals to take place and will prevent them at any cost. The Palestinian Authority and the Jordanian government also condemned the plans. Palestinian worshippers insisted on remaining in the mosque recently to prevent the extremist Zionist group from entering Al-Haram and were attacked by the Zionist regime forces, who injured more than 100 Palestinian worshippers. Just before 2003, the Zionist regime began to allow no more than three religious Jews to visit Al-Haram at a time, but since then has steadily increased that number to more than 50, and does so without the approval of the Islamic Waqf authorities. By 2009, after making racist remarks about Palestinians, the Zionist regime's internal security minister, Yitzhak Aharonovich of the right-wing Yisrael Beitenu party, paid yet another visit to Al-Haram. More Zionist provocations and desecrations continued. In September 2015, the Zionist regime prevented Palestinians from entering Al-Haram to make way for Jews to go and pray there. A Palestinian uprising ensued in which the Zionist regime police shot a score of Palestinians. Whereas the Zionist regime banned members of the Knesset from visiting Al-Haram following the uprising, Benjamin Netanyahu lifted the ban in 2018. In fact, the issue of whether Jews are allowed to enter, let alone pray at Al-Haram al-Sharif, remains a major point of contention in Jewish religious circles in the occupied territories, so much so that last year Netanyahu was rumored to have concluded a deal with a conservative rabbi and head of a political party to temporarily bar Jews from entering Al-Haram in exchange for joining his coalition cabinet. The ongoing Palestinian resistance against the Zionist colonialism of the past few weeks, whether in the occupied territories or in the West Bank and Gaza, has reached a fever pitch, with Israeli killings of Palestinians across the West Bank, especially in Jenin. While Palestinians realize that settler colonialism has targeted and continues to target the entire land of the Palestinians, the ongoing attempts to take over Palestinian Muslim holy places, whether in Al-Quds, Al-Khalil, or in Nablus, Maqam Yusuf al-Daq, a local saint, or what Zionist zealots allege in the biblical Joseph tomb, continue rapidly, as does valiant Palestinian resistance to them. While the Israelis had been corralling their supporters among Arab leaders in the last month, whether the Jordanian government to pressure the Palestinian Authority to repress any possible uprising during the current holy month of Ramadan, or the Egyptian government to warn Hamas not to engage the Zionist regime as it represses West Bank and East Al-Quds Palestinians, the next couple of weeks may see such schemes falter. Palestinian resistance and uprising against the settler colony have not ceased since the first arrival of Jewish colonists in the 1880s. The Zionist regime can call upon whatever Arab leaders it wants to help it quell Palestinian protests, but there is no reason to believe that the Palestinians will ever stop resisting as long as Zionist settler colonialism remains.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the significance of the month of Ramadan. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. Ramadan is the holiest month in the Islamic calendar. Fasting is prescribed in this month. It is a month in which the Holy Quran was revealed. If you refer to chapter 2 of the Holy Quran, verse number 185, you would see that this is the month where the Holy Quran was revealed. According to some traditions, the scriptures of Ibrahim, the Torah of Moses, and the Psalms of David, peace be upon his progeny, and all the previous prophets, were all revealed in the month of Ramadan. So, from this we know that it is something special about this month, not just in today's time and age, even if you go back in history. It is narrated from Imam Ridha alayhi salam, the 8th Immaculate and Infallible Imam. Verily, the month of Ramadan is a month in which the Holy Quran was revealed. It was in this month that the Prophet of Islam was infirmed of being a prophet. The night of Al-Qadr, which is better than 1,000 months, and therein every matter of ordainments is decreed in this blessed month. This was Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Ridha informing us about month of Ramadan. Fasting is an obligation in Islam, not an option. It is one of the 5 pillars on which Islam is built. The benefits of fasting are manifold. Fasting has personal, social, hygienic, and best of all, spiritual benefits. Hisham ibn Hakam asked Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, the 6th infallible and immaculate Imam, about the reason because of which fasting has been made obligatory on the believers. Let's get to that reason after a short break. Thank you. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are talking about the significance of the month of Ramadan. Before the break, we brought up a question that was asked off of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, Hisham ibn Hakam. He asked Imam Sadiq about the reason because of which fasting has been made obligatory. The Imam highlights one dimension for him. Imam says, "Verily, Allah made fasting obligatory in order to equalize between the poor and the rich. Surely the rich people would not otherwise feel the pain of hunger to be kind to the poor. For the rich will reach anything they wish. Thus, Almighty Allah willed to equalize between His servants and to give a taste of the pain of hunger to the rich, so that He becomes more lenient to the weak people and be more merciful towards the hungry ones. Although fasting has some social benefits, this is not the main purpose of fasting. Thus, fasting is obligatory both on the poor and the rich. The main purpose of fasting is to gain self-restraint, as stated in the Holy Quran, chapter 2, verse number 183. Brothers and sisters, while we see many people bringing up different dimensions of why fasting is good, why fasting is recommended, why fasting is obligatory, because of these different dimensions, you know, some hygienic reasons, some, you know, but ultimately, that major and grand reason is self-restraint. None is needless of self-restraint. Even the Prophet of Islam and the pure Imams needed to maintain their high standards of piety by the virtue of fasting. Thus, fasting is mandatory for all Muslims. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Western governments have been heavily subsidizing their own fossil fuel industries, even as they exhort much poorer countries to do more to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But the full extent of these subsidies has been hidden by the methods used to measure them. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jayati Ghosh, writer. This article is published under the heading, "The Outrageous and Largely Hidden, $5.9 trillion annual subsidy to the fossil fuel industry that is killing people." Stay tuned for more. The latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change should terrify policymakers and ordinary people around the world. The IPCC warns that some disastrous climate outcomes are now likely to occur, not in the distant future, but within the next 15 years or even the next decade. While this may be understandable, the Ukraine crisis has also exposed the excessively short-term policy orientation of Western governments. Many have quickly reneged on even the relatively meager and obviously inadequate climate pledges they made only a few months ago at the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow. The world is rapidly running out of time to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius and avert a climate catastrophe. U.S. President Joe Biden's administration, after unsuccessfully imploring Saudi Arabia to increase oil production, has promised to release 1 million barrels a day from the U.S. government's strategic reserves for the next 6 months. In Europe, which has been hit much harder by the fallout from the war because of its heavy reliance on natural gas, the talk is not just of more nuclear energy, but also of reviving coal-based power. Coal is by far the dirtiest fossil fuel, and rich countries routinely pillory India for using it. Only those who previously swallowed Western governments in sincere green rhetoric rather than examining the reality should be surprised by this turn of events. These governments have been heavily subsidizing their own fossil fuel industries, even as they exhorted much poorer countries to do more to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. But the full extent of these subsidies has been hidden by the methods used to measure them. The standard way to measure government support for fossil fuel production or consumption is to look at direct budgetary transfers and subsidies, as well as tax breaks for the sector. Using this method, the OECD and the International Energy Agency estimate that governments across 52 advanced and emerging economies, accounting for about 90% of global fossil fuel energy supply, provided fossil fuel subsidies worth an average of $555 billion per year from 2017 to 2019. This support declined to $345 in 2020, mainly because of the collapse in fuel prices and drop in consumption during the COVID-19 pandemic. But even before the Ukraine crisis, there were fears that rebounding fuel prices could push up subsidies as the global economy recovered. Those fears were more than borne out. It turned out that the bleakest estimates massively understand the actual fossil fuel subsidies the government provide. In a recent study, the International Monetary Fund devised a more comprehensive measure that includes both explicit subsidies or undercharging for supply costs. The implicit subsidies or undercharging for environmental costs and foregone consumption taxes. The IMF estimated that global fossil fuel subsidies in 2020 totaled $5.9 trillion, more than 10 times the OECD IEA estimate. This is not surprising. Implicit subsidies accounted for 92% of the total. Under both methodologies, India is a heavy subsidizer of fossil fuels, although lower-income countries can be partly accused given the high cost of green energy transition. But other countries' rankings change in interesting ways when implicit subsidies are considered. These important numbers highlight the extent to which government intervention is skewing prices and therefore market incentives in favor of fossil fuels rather than against them. While governments were supporting the fossil fuel industry to the tune of $5.9 trillion in 2020, the IPCC estimates that global climate finance from both public and private sources totaled only about $640 billion that year. Given this huge disparity, no one should be shocked at the fossil fuel industry's continued resilience. The world is rapidly running out of time to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius and avert a climate catastrophe, but the global economic system and Western governments appear unable to take the threat seriously.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Environmental protection is one of the most fundamental and essential tasks in the country. March 6th, 2022. Another point that is also related to the Environment Protection Organization is preventing the utilization of agricultural lands for other purposes. We have heard that in many cases, agricultural lands in the vicinity of cities and in some plains are used for other purposes. This should be stopped because it is surely to the disadvantage of national interest. Agricultural lands should be expanded. Of course, this is not only the responsibility of the Environment Protection Organization. The Ministry of Agriculture and some other organizations are influential in this regard. Another issue which is also related to the environment is the development of non-fossil energies. The energies which are not reliant on oil, energies such as the nuclear energy, which is increasingly being used in the world. In our region, many different countries are moving towards the nuclear energy. Solar, wind, and other such energies are essential.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today. And that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The Environment Protection Organization is responsible in this regard, but other organizations, such as the Energy Ministry and others, have a very important role in this regard as well. All of them must carry out their duty. Therefore, work in environmental areas is fundamental work at the national level. This is something that concerns national interest, and therefore, it is everyone's responsibility. Executive officials should pay attention to this matter as well. By God's favor, they will do so. Of course, all big endeavors are carried out with the public's backing. Today is tree planting day and all the people can be influential in this regard, in the true sense of the word. They should plant and preserve trees and prevent the disappearance of trees and gardens that exist in and out of cities. They should expand plants and good and beneficial vegetation on a daily basis. This is the people's work. They can completely participate in it and help the administration and officials. By God's favor, they will accomplish this. Once more, I wish to congratulate all the dear people and all the addressees of these statements on this Eid, and I ask Allah the Exalted to bestow health on everyone. Greetings be upon you and God's mercy and blessings.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
People in the port city of Karachi hit the streets to voice their outrage at the ouster of the elected government. The protesters say the U.S. conspired against their country. While Imran Khan never sought sore ties with any nation during his short-lived premiership,
former Prime Minister Imran Khan has accused Biden administration in Washington for toppling his government in Pakistan, for not towing U.S.'s line on foreign policy.
Khan said that his life is in danger, but he prioritizes Pakistan's independence over his life.
Imran Khan had twice tweeted, or in fact more, but he had a clear clear message for the U.S. administration that we are partners in peace. We will always be partners in peace. We are partners in trade. We'll always be partners in trade with the whole world, with everybody. But we will not take dictation from anybody.
I'm here specifically to do my part in wanting and executing the Pakistan that we all want. And I think Imran Khan represents a vision of that Pakistan. And I personally, honestly think it's not his job alone to do this. It's our job, our responsibility to come out and do this for ourselves. That's why I'm here.
We've gathered here because of the sovereignty of Pakistan, and we want Pakistan to get justice and Imran Khan to get justice, and we don't believe in the fake government.
Khan says U.S. diplomats started meeting some Pakistani officials 4 months ago, adding that Pakistan's ambassador to the U.S. was threatened.
We've gathered here to fight for a more democratic Pakistan, to fight for a free and independent Pakistan, to fight for a Pakistan that doesn't get bullied. That is our main reason for being here, for standing up for Pakistan, its sovereignty, and its integrity.
We are just here to support Imran Khan in this freedom fight. We are here to just, we don't accept the imported government. We are here to support our Prime Minister Imran Khan. He came here with the elected votes, our votes.
It's a protest for democracy. It's a protest for justice and for rights and human rights. The world, people choose their own leaders. Every citizen has a choice, has a right to choose their own people who they want to govern over them.
Khan has called for a snap election and urged an investigation into what he calls the U.S.'s plot to topple his government. He has become the first Pakistani prime minister to be removed from office through a non-confidence vote by the parliament. Mohammad Turi, Karachi.
Palestinians rallied in the besieged Gaza Strip on Sunday to mark the 48th anniversary of Palestinian Prisoners' Day.
Palestinian Prisoners Day commemorates the first Palestinian prisoner exchange deal with Tel Aviv in 1974. Statistics show that Israeli forces have arrested nearly 1 million Palestinians since 1967. The rally was organized by all Palestinian factions who came together to express their solidarity with the prisoners in Israeli jails.
On Palestinians' Prisoners' Day, we call on all international organizations, especially the Red Cross, to fulfill their obligations towards Palestinian prisoners. The Red Cross has failed to protect Palestinian prisoners and has remained silent while Palestinian prisoners continue to suffer inside Zionist jails.
Israel currently holds around 5,000 Palestinians in its prisons and detention centers, including women and minors. Protesters shouted slogans against Israel and expressed their unwavering support for the prisoners.
For us, every day is a prisoner's day because Palestinian prisoners are our heroes and they live in our hearts and minds. We pray for them, especially during this holy month of Ramadan, to remain strong in the face of their Zionist captors.
Palestinian prisoners have gone on hunger strike several times in recent years to draw attention to their plight. Activists called on Palestinian armed wings to capture more Israeli soldiers in order to swap them with Palestinian prisoners.
Only capturing more Israeli soldiers can bring about the liberation of Palestinian prisoners. Armed resistance is the best option to help secure the release of the prisoners because our enemies only understand the language of force.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, Palestinian prisoners continue to face a wide range of human rights violations in Israeli jails and detention centers.
As they mark Palestinian Prisoner Day, people here accuse the international community of turning a blind eye to the continued Israeli crimes against thousands of Palestinian prisoners. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The French presidential election was trending as an easy victory for the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, until the unrest in Ukraine began. Macron's insistence on long-term sanctions for Russia exploded already high inflation. That's resulted in widespread hardship, resentment, and tough assessments of Macron's economic record.
It's clear that Macron has not improved the quality of life for the French. He's not responsible for all the problems he's had to deal with, but it's clear there's a big difference between what he's promised and what he's delivered.
The French election may come down to this. Who do voters feel will protect the average person from the economically explosive effect of long-term sanctions on Russia over the unrest in the Ukraine? It's not a question the mainstream media wants to discuss, but it is top of mind for the average person. Polls show the race is now a dead heat, with a soaring Marine Le Pen of the National Rally taking an opposite tack, promising to oppose Russia energy sanctions, which are wreaking havoc with gas, heating, and food prices. As the challenger, Le Pen doesn't have a record to defend, and she's escaping anger over the economic crisis.
Macron has absolutely not done a good job on protecting our purchasing power. The middle class feels that Macron has contempt for the middle class, and they also feel a great contempt for the neoliberal globalist banker Macron.
Macron's far-right economic policies provoked the unprecedented Yellow Vest protests in 2018. He only made minor concessions before turning to brutal repression, and the coronavirus crisis only aggravated economic inequalities.
Macron needed to go much further in his efforts to reduce prices. It's unbearable to go to the supermarket these days. Even people who make an honest salary say that they are having trouble.
Abstention may reach record highs because many voters wonder if Le Pen would actually deliver on her populist economic promises. Her party has historically been aligned with neoliberalism as well. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
Ramadan 2022 is underway, and Muslims are fasting from dawn to dusk. But to those who are fasting for the first time, it is going to be the most different and memorable Ramadan. Tehran Municipality has invited more than 800 first-time fasters to this iftar meal to celebrate their religious coming of age. In Islam, a person would be responsible to perform their religious tasks when they reach puberty. And that's when they're duty-bound to fast during Ramadan.
We invited 850 kids today to teach them that fasting is more than a duty, but a bliss. Here, they learn about the benefits of fasting when it comes to regulating their digestive system. And more importantly, they learn that fasting polishes their soul as it boosts their spirituality.
In Muslim societies, Ramadan